Coroner's Court is today a rarely used legal procedure called after an unexplained, unexpected death. Now, sometimes it's rather easy. Somebody gets hit by a train, the body gets mangled and turned into 15 different parts. It's very easy for the jury to do what they're supposed to do. But a jury, the medical examiner, as it's known today, would call a coroner's court, also known as an inquest. The duty of the jury was, one, to determine if the person was dead, if the death was due to natural causes, accident, suicide, or murder, and if possible, name who is to blame, or at least a suspect. Now, if a person was hit by a train, they could name the railroad or the engineer. Often the jury's vote would be due to person or persons unknown to us at this time. Today, the responsibility of the coroner's court is taken on by the medical examiner. And so at least in this area, the court is rarely, if ever, used. But I believe it was in use in many places into the 1940s. It was usually a jury of six men or women, depending on when the 19th Amendment was passed. I must review how to count. But you can't serve on a jury unless you have the vote, or drink too much. So tonight, I'm going to give you the facts of an actual death under mysterious circumstances, and you are the jury. You must first determine if the man is dead. And back in the old days, the newspaper accounts say the jury viewed the body. And on one occasion in Ann Arbor in the 1870s, the coroner went out, got six men, pulled them into a room where a U of M student had committed suicide, the body still on the bed. They looked at it. Well, he looks dead. And they had the inquest in the room with the body still there. We're not going to go that far. So to start, December 31st, 1907. Men working at the Peninsula Paper Mill near Ypsilanti were breaking up anchor ice from the millway when one of the men pulled up a body. About 50 years of age, male, about 5'7" in height, 135 pounds, working man's clothing. Papers on the body led them to believe the name of the man was Daniel Corey of Chelsea. The coroner was called. He had the body moved to the funeral home's morgue. Yes, funeral homes had morgues. And there, the body was identified positively as Daniel Corey, a ditch digger by trade. Further investigation showed that he had been working on the Hamilton Ditch, mile and a half east of Ypsilanti, had finished the job and had been in town for about 2-3 days, drinking heavily, his first drinking spree in about 3 years. Seemed to have a considerable amount of money. No money was found on the body. The watch chain was broken. Watch wasn't found. The left pocket was turned inside out. He had a cut 2.5 inches wide on his forehead. Inquiries showed that he had been in town, he'd been drinking, and had been spending apparently fairly freely. In one of the places, he had oysters and paid with a $20 bill and clearly had more money. This was 1907. The $20 bill covered a lot. Got change. And was seen at various places. His son said he always carried in his vest pocket $100. And he was interested in buying a team of horses. And he was in the habit of holding on to his money until he had enough to purchase what he wanted. And as I mentioned, no money was found on the body. Then again, it turns out he didn't have his watch on the body because he had pawned it for 50 cents and promised to come back later and buy it back for $1. The inquest was held. Witnesses were called. They said they saw him here spending money with a stranger. Nobody could identify the stranger. They saw him someplace else. Maybe it wasn't Corey. Maybe it was somebody else. Some said they saw Daniel Corey walking down the railroad tracks. His son said that he really was a man who liked to walk and had been a section hand crew member for the railroad. And he didn't mind walking the tracks. The roads were in such bad conditions back then that it was safe, it was easier to walk the tracks than it was to take the roads. Which also explains why there were so many inquests over people being hit by trains back then. After a few days, the coroner and the sheriff decided that maybe they should go out to the Peninsula Paper Mill and do a little investigation. They took a rack, reached down, pulled out a hat that may have belonged to Daniel Corey, a child's dress as a 4 or 5 year old child would have worn, covered in blood, and a piece of carpet. The carpeting was used at the mill to wipe machinery. At about this time, it came out that a piece of carpet had been wrapped around one of Corey's legs and twisted, and when pulled out, his head had been covered in a child's garment. Also available. At the inquest, a man named Oscar Lawrence was asked about his contact with Corey. They met in one of the saloons, he said. They talked. Lawrence had horses to sell. They couldn't agree on a price. When they left at quitting time, they left, he and another man left Corey on the sidewalk, heavily intoxicated. The bartender said they left, all three left together in Lawrence's rig. Lawrence was not the most reputable member of the community. He had been before the Justice of the Peace a number of times, charged with drunkenness and using foul language in the presence of women and children. That using bad language was against the law in the state of Michigan from the 1890s until 2004. They repealed the law then, and my complaint is They did it wrong. They should have taken that sexist language out so I don't have to listen to that language. Lawrence had also been accused but acquitted of attempting to murder his own child with a drug overdose, an infant. Not most reputable person in town, but he was about the only witness they had. Oh, incidentally, if you were to stand where Oscar Lawrence's house was in 1907 and looked west, you would see where the Peninsula Paper Mill was. Just a tidbit. Now, if you have any questions, please ask. Is there anything I need to clarify here?
How old was Lawrence's child?
The child he was alleged to try to kill was an infant. Another child, an older child, obviously, testified in a manner that cleared him.
How many years after the allegation?
I'm not sure.
Did Lawrence actually own a Mercedes?
He is described as a horse trader in the accounts. Mm-hmm. Any more?
In 1907, was it common for saloons and things not to be able to break large bills?
I think it's pretty much like today. It depends on how much is in the cash box. But he did charge Corey or whoever it was able to get change for a 20. I see a hand up in the back.
Had Tumont ever been known to be in contact before? Like, were they acquaintances or anything?
Lawrence said this was the first time they had ever met. Lawrence said that he was treating in the Occidental Saloon and saw Corey standing around but not drinking, so he invited Corey to join them.
Did they ever figure out how to do
that? Oh dear, I forgot to mention that, didn't I? That's embarrassing. And I'm glad you asked, because it means I can tell a story. At the inquest, the prosecutor asked the doctor who had done the autopsy, what was the cause of death? Asphyxiation. And the prosecutor asked the doctor to explain in understandable language what that meant. The doctor answered, and I quote, he stopped breathing. Doctor also said that there was an abrasion on the brain, but the skull was not cracked. And no water in the lungs. So he was dead before he went into the water. I see a hand. Yes.
Were they able to identify any source for the children's clothing he was found with?
Apparently they used the children's clothing at the mill for wiping machinery and or packing. I assume without the child. Yes.
How thick was the ice on the river at that time of year?
I don't know. One theory to explain what happened was that Corey, intoxicated, walking along the tracks, got to the mill. It started to rain. He went into the wheelhouse above where he was found, and there were openings in the floor, 3 feet across, one of which was open. He fell in. He may have hit his head as he fell. Yes. No, he did not.
So he said he had the child's garment on his head with the piece of carpet?
Wrapped around the leg, yes. When found. The professionalism of the police it back then was not quite what it is today.
So it was better?
I saw a sea. You can judge by this story. I saw a CD of former Washtenaw County Sheriff Doug Harvey, who was in charge of the co-ed killings in the late 60s. He was talking about when he first became a police officer, his first day on patrol, pulled a woman over for a traffic violation, had her dead to rights, and then realized he had never been taught how to write a ticket.
What are the standards by which we should judge this case? Is it beyond a reasonable doubt, or is it a reasonable suspicion?
Reasonable suspicion. Nothing, we're not doing anything here tonight binding. The authorities are not going to get too enthusiastic over your findings. I'm sorry. Any more questions? Oh, I see one over there.
So there was a theory that he may have fallen getting this abrasion on his head.
Yes.
Is there any indication that it could have been from a weapon or perhaps, a horse or something?
There was a suspicion. The abrasion on the forehead was what one newspaper referred to as the cause of a slight suspicion of foul play. People,
were any of the clothes worn or damaged in any way? Were they on him?
They were on the body, and there was no report at the time of damage to the body, although the body was exhumed because the prosecutor had been told that there may have been two knife wounds underneath the arm. However, after the exhumation, no further mention of that was made. The report didn't specify. I should add that the records of these inquiries have disappeared, and as far as I know, they don't exist anymore. So I'm dependent on newspaper accounts of the time, which are very detailed. Oh, my goodness. Two hands over here. Okay, you first.
Was there any more information from the pawn shop owner on how his emotional state when he sold his watch?
It was not at a pawn shop. He simply ran into somebody he knew who bought the watch from him. And the sheriff was very protective of him, saying he had nothing to do with the case and refused to even give his name to the public, although he was called as a witness to the inquest. Yes.
Was the deceased left or right-handed, or do we know?
We don't know. Did you see something? Yes.
Do you have any more of the description of the wheelhouse?
No, I don't. Incidentally, the site has, for those of you who are familiar with that section of the river, you're probably thinking of that big building on the north side of the river with the big sign, Peninsula Paper Mill, on it. That was built in 1914. Everything would have been on the south side of the river where Peninsula Place apartments are now.
So you mentioned that there was a third party at the bar with Lawrence and Carey. Is
yes.
there any further information on this person?
His name was Robert Hill. He said that he pretty much confirmed what Lawrence said, but that's about all the information. I don't even think he was called to the inquest. Oh, yes, he was called at the inquest. He confirmed everything that Lawrence said. Yes.
This Lawrence character, you said that he had been accused of attempted murder of his child, is that right?
Yes, it was. The child was an infant or very young,
And he was, and apparently he gave it, or he was alleged to try and give it a medication similar to morphine to overdose on. However, the chief witness was actually in another room at the time.
Oh, but do we know what happened to that child?
The child grew up. The child lived. So. Yes. It just, there was a store. These questions are good because it's reminding me of all the stuff I forgot. There's a lot to remember here. There were storeroom, the storage room was where the carpet came from, and it was accessible from the outside. One of the workmen at the mill said that night he went out to the stock room, heard something was being dragged, turned on the lights, no further explanation, looked around, didn't see anything, turned off the lights, and then again heard the sound, it looked like something being dragged. Although a newspaper account states there's a lot of rats there.
Oh, yes. Did they find any blood in the mill?
They didn't find any in the mill. It was the child's garment was soaked with blood, but that's about it.
Did you ever find what exactly caused that cut on his head?
Never. They didn't determine this to any certainty. It may have been caused by when he fell and hit something before he hit the water.
So they didn't find any weapon or anything that they could
no.
say.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yes.
Was there any way of telling whose blood it was that was on this child's garment? I mean, was it his blood? Was it?
They didn't have the means to do the testing then, or
was it fresh blood, or was it like old blood that
would have
dried up and then.
I think the assumption was made, and it's probably correct, that it was Corey's blood from the time he died. Highly unlikely somebody else at the mill would have used a child's garment to wipe an injury and then toss it into the river onto a body that he didn't see or something like that. Okay.
Was there ever a transaction with the two parties over a horse?
Lawrence said they talked about it, but couldn't come to a conclusion. And that was the only time the two men ever met.
So Corey never took possession of the horse.
No. Okay.
Did they ever figure out what was taken from that pocket that was turned out?
No. I hope that's not too detailed.
I have a question somewhat related to the time period as well as the watch.
Yes.
So you bought a pocket watch, did it come with a chain, or did you have a separate chain that you could attach a watch to?
I assume it's been a while since I was buying watches in 1907, but but I assume in most cases the chain would have come with the watch.
Okay, you said the chain was there, but the watch was gone.
Yes.
So is there any reason why if you pawned a watch, you would have pawned just the watch and not the watch and the chain?
I think it would depend on what if the chain was being used for other purposes, although I don't know what they would be, like maybe the keychain or something. Okay, maybe that's it. It's been so long. Feel free to shout out the questions. I'm looking into lights.
Is there a real motive to kill him by anyone?
If he was carrying $100 in his vest pocket, yes.
Were there any known that? Besides his brother,
his son. He was seen spending money. If it was Corey that people saw spending money, they would have seen him. He was rather tipsy at the time, and pr- probably showing people, as I said, one person said, or did I say, that saw that he had a, had paid for oysters with a $20 bill. He had at least one other $20 bill, as well as fives, tens. And the account says he had a $2 bills as well. So, yes?
Was there any indication why he had a piece of carpet wrapped around his leg?
If he was murdered, it would be probably make it easier to drag the body.
If he were murdered, why would there be a child's garment covering the blood on his head?
To keep it, keep it from spreading onto the ground where somebody might find it.
Were there any noticeable markings, such as bruises around his neck?
Not around his neck, but his face was described as badly bruised. Medical examination wasn't all that great either back then.
So why did he start drinking that day? Is there any evidence at all of an inciting incident of any kind?
No, but apparently there was trouble at home, that there was some kind of dispute or disruption at home. He apparently asked if he could spend the night at Christmas Eve at a friend's house, but didn't show up.
Was there, does his son have an alibi for this time?
I'm sorry, I forgot to ask him.
Wife
is not even mentioned.
Okay.
Yep.
Pardon? Did he have a will?
Again, not mentioned.
Did it say why he was looking to buy a team of horses if he was a workman?
One of the interesting things about the newspaper accounts is when the body is found, he's described as a ditch digger. By the time of the inquest, when it was suspected he was a victim of murder, he's a contractor. And Lawrence said that Corey tried to hire him at $3.50 a day to work on some of his contracts. So, and one of the papers found on Corey showed figures for working on a ditch. So he may have been the one who was contracted to do the work. In fact, he did have a contract from the county commissioner, who also testified at the inquest. What he said is not recorded, so no, he does not have an alibi.
Is there anyone other than the person that had the watch that was not named that was purposefully not named in the case? Like, is that the only person whose name was withheld?
Only his name was withheld, and then again, if you read the account of the inquest, it's, you know, there's the name who bought the watch from Corey. So much for security and keeping secrets.
Was Lawrence known to exhibit any behavior out of the ordinary after the death of Martin?
His behavior was pretty bad to begin with. So. Okay. All right, I'm getting... Amber is making hand signals to me, and... yes, the one that goes. So we're going to take the vote now. You're the jury. Corey was found in the ice-cold waters of the Huron River. He was buried. There was two autopsies and a second burial. How many of you think he is dead? That's impressive. How many of you think death was due to natural causes? We might be onto something. How about accident? Perhaps. Suicide? No. Suicide. Murder. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Now I'll tell you what I didn't tell you. 1911, a man named Henry Miller is leaving Ypsilanti. He tells his wife, from whom he is divorced, that after he's gone and he's leaving town and she will never see him again because he'd been very well acquainted with Mrs. Lawrence, Mabel. He was also responsible for arranging Lawrence's then current abode of Jackson Prison for larceny, failing to return money that had somehow come into his possession, knowing it belonged to someone else. Mm-hmm. And he's told her that Lawrence's wife had told him that Oscar Lawrence and his brother-in-law had murdered Corey. It then comes out that at the time of the murder, the child's garment that had been wrapped around Corey's head looked like one that had been given to the brother-in-law's family by a woman active in charity work. But she refused to say that that was the garment. And the brother-in-law's family, having been dependent on charity before the murder, seemed to have plenty of money after. Then again, Corey, being told of Miller's claim to have had an affair with his wife, which his wife denied, told the authorities that Mr. Miller was an arsonist and had set 4 buildings that he had owned on fire in Superior Township for insurance. The authorities showed their gratitude to Mr. Miller for the information that he provided. Incidentally, as sheriff's deputy, the wife didn't wait for him to leave town. She went straight to the police because he owed her $50. First order of business, he paid up. Then he told. But let's see. Lost my train of thought here. It's out there somewhere.
Don't get hit by it.
This is a good audience. Okay. So Mr. Miller is not exactly Mr. Outstanding Citizen of the Year, is he? But he ended up spending time in prison. I don't think he and Lawrence were cellmates. What happened to Oscar Lawrence? Well, I assume he's dead. He supposedly died by 1918, although I've never come across anything that says that. His wife married 3 more times and outlived all 3 husbands. That is something I'm going to have to make further inquiries about. Mm-hmm. So would you like to know more? Sorry. Sorry. There's limits to knowledge. And this is what juries have to work with. Thank you.